Welcome, everybody. It is June 15th, and my name is Nettie Lagasse. I'm the Associate Executive Director at NYISO, and this is our monthly open teleconference. So happy to have all of you on as guests. This month, we are joined by Alistair Morrison and Ravi David, who are the co-chairs of our working group on ebook metadata. That's the short name. The long name for the project is eBook Bibliographic Metadata Requirements in the Sale, Publication, Discovery, Delivery, and Preservation Supply Chain. So you can see why we have a short name for that project. Really happy to have you with us, Alistair and Ravi. Our format is pretty loose. Typically, we just have a conversation with folks who've joined us. And we'll open the floor to any questions after that. But if you have a burning question and you need to get it in, that's no problem. We're pretty casual. Just pipe up with your question. I will say that it is very helpful because we are recording the call and because we're all in different places. If you are not speaking and you can mute your line, that is, if you have a mute button on your telephone, that you go ahead and press mute when you are not actually talking. That helps a lot in background noise. There's always shuffling going on or lawnmowers or dogs barking, that kind of thing. If you don't have a mute button on your telephone, you can use *6. That will mute you, and *6, the same code, will also unmute you. If there's a lot of noise coming from one particular area, I might go ahead and mute you myself, but I like to give you the power to do that. So thanks for helping out with that kind of housekeeping. We are also recording the call. We'll post it on our website for people who couldn't make it today, so just be aware of that. We often, at the end of our conversation, we will stop the recording. So if there is a question you wanted to ask or some conversation you wanted to have and you did not want to be recorded, there will be an opportunity to do that. Also, at the end of the conversation, we ask if anyone has any questions or concerns about NYISO in general. So there's also a general opportunity to talk about NYISO or really anything outside of the particular topic for the open teleconference this month. So with all of that, let's get started on our topic today. Alistair and Ravit, hello, and thank you again for joining us today. I wonder if you could just give a very brief introduction, just say your name, your title, and what you do at your institution, and then we can get going into the recommended practice itself.
Sure. Why don't you go first, Ravit?
Thank you, sir. So my name is Ravit Ovid. I'm coordinating the ebook service in Scholars Portal at the University of Toronto in Ontario, Canada. I work with vendors and publishers to provide access and discoverability for ebooks with perpetual access rights.
Great, thanks.
And I'm Alistair Morrison. I'm the manager of library applications at Johns Hopkins University Libraries. Although when I started this project, I was product manager for books on Science Direct at Elsevier. So I've sort of changed sides of the table in the middle of the project.
Which I think is an interesting piece. Yeah, this project has been a long time in the making, but I think that also reflects its participants' high dedication to quality and analysis. So the members of this working group have been working on it for a few years now, but it is finally considered complete. The next step that we will be doing with this draft recommended practice is releasing it for public comment. So all of you on the call will have a chance to take a look at it directly, quite imminently. We're just wrapping up the last bits of the working group approval this week. So I think next week at the very latest, hopefully this week with my fingers crossed, we'll be releasing it. So you'll see an announcement go out about that with a link to the document and a form that you can submit comments. So really interested in having everyone's input, additional perspectives, and so on. So Ravit and Alistair and any working group member who's on this call, really congratulations on all of your hard work. I know it has, I don't want to say it's taken a lot out of you, but everyone has put a lot into it for sure. So I'm hoping that this call, we could talk about what's in it, get people interested, stimulated in taking a look when it comes out. So my questions are all in that area. So the title of the document, again, is eBook Bibliographic Metadata Requirements in the Sale, Publication, Discovery, Delivery, and Preservation Supply Chain. So this indicates that there are eBooks stakeholders in eBooks and the eBook process who are not libraries and who are not publishers. Who are some stakeholders, or can you describe the supply chain or the whole constellation outside of the direct ones that we know about, libraries and publishers?
Sure, I can take a stab at that. And I have to say, one of the best things about the project was many of those stakeholders are represented on the working group, thanks to Nettie and NISO recruiting them, doing a really good job putting together a good diverse group of people to work on this. The stakeholders include service providers for libraries, people who do metadata enrichment, jobbers who help us buy our books, or ebooks at least, aggregators, those kinds of folks. They also include retailers, because publishers don't just sell to libraries, they also sell to Amazon.com and other ebook retailers. And then I guess those are the main ones. There's other sort of tricky little things that come in. And then downstream, there's also the preservation aspect of this. So organizations like Portico that also need to preserve eBooks and have sort of a unique set of challenges. The thing that was interesting is that sort of at each stage, there's a real different set of issues that people focus on. And I personally believe that's why there's a lot of I wouldn't say they're conflicting interests, but there's just a lot of miscommunication amongst the stakeholders. And so, you know, for instance, Onyx has got like 10 date fields that are all about, when will this book be available? When can I start selling it? Because it's a format that's for publishers to communicate with retailers. And Right. Those are not things that academic libraries care about, but they're very, very important to publishers.
Right, right. Can you so I know that the way that the group, created its process was to try to understand the cycle from all the different perspectives. Can you characterize at a high level or low level what you discovered or what gaps you found about how these different stakeholders create, use, and rely on metadata? Are there generalizations or interesting perspectives that came to light in the working group process?
Okay, why don't we just alternate on those questions?
Sure. I think the gaps, first of all, were not something that we were aware of. So when we first met, it was quite interesting to see how we all brought our needs and perspective into the working group. And we're not quite aware that most of us work very differently than what we imagined. And this is why they have different needs. One of the things, for instance, is that books are being announced before they actually get published. Mm-hmm. So they need to be announced with minimal metadata, but still there needs to be something there. And this something, even if there's no title yet or the title might change in the future, this all counts as the initial metadata of the future or prospective title. And so this need to come up with a certain certain metadata at such an early stage, of course, create some problem down the line where the book actually gets published and now it has a different title or the editor change or the publication year change. And so how do we communicate the changes in metadata to all the stakeholders and make sure it gets updated in all the distribution channels that this title is going to be used. So these are the things that we realized were hard to anticipate, especially when we all work in a very specific niche and we usually are not aware what others are doing. So at what point, say, an aggregator who also provides metadata enrichment service gets this initial metadata and learns that actually things have changed, and at what point we get the information at the library, and so on.
I think a big piece of the document concentrates on the overall supply chain or the supply network. What are some examples of how this network supports stakeholder classes? Or can you describe the network in a general way? I know there was some pictures you included in the presentation you gave at NYSO Plus in February.
Sure. The original source of metadata is usually the publisher. And then as Ravit said, often it's kind of preliminary or even tentative metadata. You know, it's a title list in January for books that the publisher wants to publish in December. And those get distributed out to different channels. It can go out to retailers, it can go out to potential buyers like libraries, it can go out to aggregator platforms. Mostly retailers and libraries sort of get this early look at the metadata. I think that's important, I'm looking at one of my diagrams here, is that the metadata in the publishing house, the metadata is also process control information. You know, like the ISBN usually has a really big role in the financial reporting and project tracking, things like that. So the metadata is sort of it's a working thing inside the publishing house while the book's being created. And at the same time, it's also being shared in sales proposals and things like that. Then the publisher will usually, and I'm speaking mostly from my own experience here, if they're selling to academic libraries, contract with somebody else like OCLC to produce MARC records that academic libraries want to receive to input into their catalog. And that's usually translation of whatever internal format you're using, probably Onyx, at your publishing house into a MARC format that the libraries want to receive. Those MARC records can also be enriched by other third parties to add things like book covers or link data and things like that. And there's third party companies that specialize in that sort of thing. And then they would go to that. So the MARC records can go to the academic library and maybe be enriched afterwards, or maybe the library gets all their records from a third party that does enriched records and just provides them that way. Then there's other things that happen too. Like I found out, now I'm at a library, I'm learning more about, what happens to a book after you sell it. And so there's ongoing things like having to export your holdings to Gobi so that they don't sell you the same books you already have. There's a lot of exporting of records to other entities to explain what your online holdings are and also what your holdings are. So the network gets pretty diverse at that point. And then like preservation would be another example of that, of, you know, who's got a copy of this online book that's now in Portico, you know, that sort of thing.
So there's a lot of metadata flying around.
There is a lot of metadata flying around, yeah. And yeah, it's all, you know, complicated enormously by the Ferber issues that that librarians are always dealing with. What do you mean by the same book?
Yeah. Yep.
I would sort of throw in there that we discovered early on, we discovered early on that there's no book identifier, you know.
Yeah.
There's certainly not the ISBN. And, you know, there's other identifiers that are better or worse in certain situations, but the recommendation itself does not say, you know, the OCLC number cures all evils, you know, cures all ills,
right.
Sorry. So it's very challenging.
So when you were deciding how to put together the recommended practice document, what resources, existing standards, practices, did you rely on when you created it? Or how did you decide to scope your work or make the plan for it that you did? It was a kind of a, I think this is one of really the biggest, when this project started at NISO, it had a really big scope. I really have to hand it to the group for keeping at it and getting your arms around it, because I think it could easily have gone off in a million directions. So how did you decide to attack the problem of communicating metadata?
Right. So we had when we first started, we have various ideas where we want to go, and the scope indeed changed a lot, as you say, Navi. I think we realized at a very early stage that we have to first reach to an agreement on the basics before we can start talking about linked data and all the complex types of uses of metadata. And we realized that there's many cases where the same term is being used differently by the different stakeholders. And we had to, first of all, level that down to an agreement about the very, very basic elements of ebook metadata. So that was one thing that sort of brought or helped us to scope the work. The second thing was that we didn't want to invent the wheel in any way, because we really think that recommended practice is something that we actually want people to practice eventually. And so we wanted to consult everything that was out there with regards to ebook metadata and best practices, whether it was the Ferber model that we wanted to draw upon in order to identify book according to the four categories of work: expression, manifestation, and item. We consulted a lot with BISEC recommendation for ebooks, Onyx, Editor, even Crossref guidelines for DOI when we looked at identifiers. So everything that basically was written, white papers, recommendations, standards that we could look at and consult with, we wanted to include them and build on them in order again to create, to sort of come up, come out of the context that was already existing for ebooks, and not starting from scratch and introducing to people something that's completely out of context for them. When we decided to focus on achieving this sort of over across the board agreement on the basic metadata fields, we focused on titles, names, dates, book identifiers and subjects. And with each one, we realized how much work we had to do in order to really build a practice that could be useful for everyone in terms of building a common language. When we say publication date, what do we mean by publication date versus copyright date? Things like that. So there was a lot of drilling down to the very basic of metadata terminology, of basic elements, in order to make sure we're all using the same element for the same purpose and create common understanding and agreement upon those basic elements.
Good job. So since people on the phone haven't actually seen the document, although we've been throwing it, sending it back and forth between us for the last while, and we're pretty familiar with it, can you describe, maybe from the table of contents, the outline for the recommendation, the recommended practice, and how you anticipate a user or reader might approach it, and how would you like it to be adopted in this format?
Sure. As Ravit was saying in her answer to the previous question, we didn't try to create a new standard. Onyx and BISG are, have a standards that are widely used by the book publisher industry. Libraries have their own standards, MARC, and then cataloging standards. The goal was to create a shared understanding, as Ravit was saying. And that's how we envision it being used. The idea is that there's sections on those five elements that Ravit detailed, and we try to go through and talk about what everyone means by these and what's important to the different stakeholders. So usually there's a structure where there's a definition. So we'll have an element, I'm reading from the table of contents, there's an element like title, and then there's a definition, and then there's a short table of examples of how different stakeholders, what they need from the title element. And that's followed by some general guidelines and then specific recommendations for lower level, stuff like that, and then any sort of cases that come up. An example that's easiest to illustrate is probably dates. So the different stakeholders have very different needs for dates. So publishers, often the date determines when they get to report revenue and expenses. So they need a publication date that is in the same fiscal year that they wanted to have that revenue or that recognize the revenue or count the expenses. Libraries need that publication date to be a representation of how old the content is. That's probably also the main interest of the patron or the reader, is they want the publication date to tell them how old it is. But I think we've all seen examples of cases where people have gotten confused about, I just put it online. Maybe today is the day that it was published. And so we've got best practices saying, no, we don't care when it went online. That's not the publication date. You can call that the online publication date if you really must. But the publication date is when the work itself, well, not the work, but the expression the manifestation was created. It's intellectual, the date of the intellectual property being created, that sort of thing. So we envision it being used that way, that people would look at this and get a perspective of the other stakeholders that they're not familiar with. This is the kind of thing that's going to be used by people who are probably pretty familiar with their own practices. And it's certainly not intended at all to be a guide to how to use Onyx or BISG guidelines or how to do MARC, how to create MARC records. In fact, we're constantly sort of steering away from those discussions of like, this is not a MARC recommendation. This is higher level, but it's meant to, it does have examples of, how you would code this data in Onyx, how you code it in MARC or MODS or other standards, so that people can see what each other's doing and get a sense of the purpose to which other stakeholders might put that element.
All right. How would you like the document to be adopted? That it makes its way around and people start to follow the recommendations, and then we reach metadata nirvana?
I wish, but I'm more realistic about it, but I really think we're heading in the right direction. And I really think that even the small experience we had as a group of such a diversified group of people in the industry, the amount of knowledge we gain on one each other's workflows just makes me very optimistic about the practice, because I'm sure we all want to make things better, especially in this industry, which the ebook, which has so much potential in the age of linked data and open web. I think what we wanted is really for people to be able to look at the definition, to look at a common uses of a certain element, and follow that also at the level of the format, because if, as Alistair mentioned, it's hard to agree whether publication date is the original publication date or the online date. That was one of the things we wanted to sort of clarify and be very specific about. And the other thing was in what format we're going to put the date. So we're going to put the year first, the month, the day, and so on. So we try to also specify the ISO standards that we would like people to follow. All those things to really normalize the metadata, because we know there's an uncoordinated provision of metadata for multiple sources in the ebook life cycle, and we really wanted to make sure that they all align eventually, at least around those five basic elements. Just an example from the world of identifiers, and this is something we really invested a lot of work in, because previously when we had teleconferences like that with NISO and outside, and we wanted to sort of know what are the most crucial pain points when it comes to ebooks, definitely ISBN is the most painful one. And with that, when we discussed identifiers in the recommended practice, we really try to be very, very precise. And just in a recent example from sort of my daily life with ebooks, we know that ISBN stopped creating 10-digit ISBN around 2007. And then we all moved to 13-digit ISBNs. So one of the things we would like people to always put in the metadata is whether the ISBN is a 13-digit ISBN or 10-digit ISBN, whether it's hardcover, whether it's paper, whether it's an EPUB. So we specify all those things, but just recently I came across a new practice, for instance, that books that came out in 2020 had in the metadata 10-digit ISBN. Someone put the ISBN and said in brackets 10-digit ISBN. So to look at our practice, yes, we really want you to specify exactly what type of ISBN you're putting there. But 10-digit ISBN for a 2020 title, I don't know. It just dropped the 978, the prefix. Oh. and that's a 13-digit ISBN. So I would like people to use 10-digit ISBN only for legacy and, you know, obsolete ISBNs that are no longer out there. And that cannot happen for a book that just came out, clearly. So this
did you actually say that in the recommended practice, or is that something you're going to have to add?
That's something I will have to add. That's
actually, I'm looking at it right now. There,
yes, exactly.
You did say use of ISBN 10 is not recommended unless it is clearly references the ISBN as obsolete.
So. Not strong enough, I guess. You know.
Yeah. I'll put it in red.
Great. Well, I would like to allow some time for people who are on the line to ask questions or let us know what they think about all of this. So, guests on the line, thank you for attending our call. Do you have any questions or points you'd like to raise with Alistair and Ravit about ebook metadata or what you hope is in the recommended practice that you'll be able to see very soon? And if you muted your line without a mute button to unmute, it's just star six.
We can talk about pet peeves too. One of the recommendations is not to include the words New York Times bestseller in the title field.
Hi, Maggie.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, yes.
I have a question. I work at NC State University Libraries. My name is Joanne Song. I'm the Electronic Resource Librarian here. So I have a question about, so we have recently run into a problem with one publisher, particularly with their ebooks. The problem with that is this ebook has like DOI, but that DOI is like a shared DOI. So basically, if you get to the link and then it'll take you to a shared DOI platform where it has two links, and the library IMA, we only purchase access to one of the links, but not to the other ones. So I tried to bring this issue to the publishers, but the feedback from the publisher is this publisher has like some other member publishers. So that's a problem. That is a problem for the member publisher. That's something that they cannot resolve. So I'm wondering if these kind of issues are covered with this metadata recommendation, or has any of the members are aware of these issues?
So it's resolution of the ebook identifier.
Yeah.
I don't think we really addressed standards for linking to the ebook. Would you say that's true?
I think you concentrated on describing.
Sorry, I was muted. Sorry. Yeah, we did say that we do not want chapter level DOIs, for instance. We want the full DOI. So that's something we did mention with regards to DOI in specific. The general recommendation was to try and include all the possible identifiers that were registered with this title. So I understand that your library is focusing mainly on DOI, and I think sometimes the DOIs are also activated a bit late after the book is out or can be out without a DOI associated with it also. So I came across such things as well. We weren't that specific in the recommended practice, but definitely if you register a DOI or you provide a DOI link, then it has to be resolvable. I agree.
Were you asking about DOI or about permalink type links?
I think I was asking about a shared DOI, like a DOI resolution, something like that.
Oh, it was
DOI. I don't know. Yeah, okay. I don't know what would be the exact term for that, but it looks like it's two publishers that share one DOI link, and that link being provided to us. The problem for us is we only purchase access to one of those. So it's really confusing to the patrons because as a patron
fee.
That's a good one. I hadn't heard of that before, and it sounds like kind of at least a violation of the spirit of DOI. I
agree. Do you see it in monographs or articles?
Monographs, ebooks, yeah.
Wow.
Well, it would be great if you can comment on that and give us an example when the draft is out for public review, and we will do our best to include it in the final draft.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Thank you.
Any other questions or points?
Hi, this is Evan Owens. I'm on the NYSO JATS Standing Committee, XML for journal articles, but also on the BITS XML for books. And so, just a quick question on this. Do you think that any of this is stuff that people would want to include in the XML for their books? And if so, it would be good to share this with the BITS committee. So we can make sure that everything is included and possible.
I'm on the BITS working committee.
Oh, good.
So I think it kind of bleeded my experience into that as well. But definitely, one of the things that we wanted to do in providing examples was we took Mark, because Mark is still the most common standard being used by libraries for now. And then we brought examples from Onyx, and then we brought examples from BITS as an example for an XML metadata standard. So okay. The recommended practice will actually include many examples of BITS, if it helps to sort of bring the two together.
It would be great to get feedback.
Yeah, I didn't know that there was a BITS connection already. That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else? You need to unmute your phone. It's star 6 to unmute if you don't have a mute button. I'll wait a minute or a little bit. Going once, going twice. All right, I'm going to stop the recording in case there's any questions that people don't want recorded, and we'll continue.